Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th of April, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, dunk in the blues, here comes the news. Oh, before we do that, however, I do want to say, for you who normally listen on the YouTube thing that you kids play with, we're having technical difficulties, and we'll get a stream up, I think, shortly, but of course, if you're waiting for it to start on YouTube, you don't hear this anyway. Okay, therefore, on to the news. A bug in Microsoft Word was exploited by hackers for months before it was eventually fixed. The flaw allowed attackers to take control of a computer via malicious document files. The zero-day or previously undetected vulnerability was patched earlier this month. However, it has since emerged that Microsoft was told about it in October, nearly 6 months ago. The problem was first discovered in July of 2016.
Nearly a year ago.
Right. 9 months ago, it was discovered. 6 months ago, it was reported to Microsoft. What happened during those 3 months? I'm sure we'll never know. And Microsoft then took 6 months to not fix it. Microsoft could have notified customers to make a change to settings in Word that would have prevented the vulnerability from being exploited, but that would also have alerted the hackers to its existence. The decision to wait for a patch seems to have allowed a window of opportunity for hackers to discover the flaw on their own. In March, cybersecurity company FireEye noticed financial hacking software that was being distributed with the Microsoft bug. McAfee found attacks that were exploiting it too. McAfee faced some criticism, however, for publishing a blog post about the vulnerability with details hackers may have found useful 2 days before it was fixed. Yet another company, Proofpoint, found that the vulnerability was being targeted by scammers trying to distribute DryDex malware, which infects a victim's computer before snooping on banking login. There were even reports of hacking after the patch was made available. Cybersecurity outlet Morphosec said that employees at Ben-Gurion University in Israel had their email accounts compromised by attackers who had then sent infected documents to medical professionals and contacts at technology companies all over the world. Prior to public disclosure, our engineers were aware of a small number of attempts to use this vulnerability through targeted spam designed to convince users to open a malicious attachment, a Microsoft spokesrobot said. Customers who applied the 11 April security update were already protected, he added. In an ideal world, it would have been fixed sooner. However, patching software runs on millions of computers around the world, and it's not an easy process. There's always this huge challenge because companies want to patch their software, but they want to do it properly. They want to make sure they've been comprehensive with a fix. And, of course, as we've said many, many times, no two Windows installations are identical. So they have a lot of testing to do and then distributing it to the millions of computers around the world. That's not easy either. So I guess I understand the issue. Yeah, I don't even have to like it, but I do understand it. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is hackers exploited Microsoft Word bug for months? And your choices are, I don't use Word. I should run the security tango. I dance the tango regularly. And, oh, I'm probably fine. Well done. So far, it's very slow loading up. So far, some of you have voted in the poll, and something is in the lead, and I guess we'll eventually get there, but things are slow. It looks there. I don't know if it's my system, or I don't know what it is. I am using an interesting little add-on to Chrome called Hotspot Shield, which is a VPN proxy. So I'm running actually VPN.
So it finds, hides where you actually are?
It hides where I am, where I'm going, where I'm from, what I'm doing. It hides everything. And the folks at Hotspot, which is actually a Canadian company, say they are not logging anything. They're one of the few companies around. They're also, I think they're the same company that owns Opera, although I'd have to look that up to be sure.
And what do they charge for that?
Zero.
Hotspot's the name of it?
Hotspot. No, it's called, I think Hotspot. Hold on. Hotspot Shield. And it's an add-on for Chrome. So it only protects Chrome at this point. This particular product only protects Chrome. So it doesn't protect email. It doesn't protect anything else. But, of course, if you're using Gmail, that's already encrypted and, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
So it's nice to check those things out.
Email isn't really protected anyway in most cases. Over the years, we keep telling people email is like a postcard. Anyone along the way can read it if they want to. They probably wouldn't, but they could.
Yeah, right. The same thing is true of text messages and
text
stuff
messages,
like that.
Cell phones. Cell phone text messages aren't encrypted. So if you and many email services are now encrypting their email to them. So if you have a Google account, you look at your Google Mail on your computer. The passage between you and Google is encrypted, but then you send it to someone on AOL, it's decrypted and sent to AOL.
Right, but if it's Gmail to Gmail,
it's encrypted.
It stays encrypted.
If it's Apple to Apple, it's encrypted.
Right. So that's an interesting thing. That's also why so many people are using WhatsApp for messaging, because it's encrypted end-to-end as well.
But now the British government, after the last terror attack they had, there are rumblings that they are going to require encryption messaging company like WhatsApp and Signal and what's the other big one? Whatever the three big ones. They're going to have to require unencrypted government access on demand.
Yep.
And so even if companies release new versions that can be unencrypted by the government, the bad guys will just keep using the old version.
Yeah.
So it's the old story. If cryptography is outlawed, only the outlaws will have cryptography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So the math is out there. We know how to do it right. It is done right by several companies. Yep. And so the good guys are ultimately harmed because overprotective governments want to be able to read the bad guys' messages, which means they can read the good guys' messages too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, we won't do that. We need a warrant for that. Well, tell that to all the people that have warrants erroneously issued.
Yeah.
Their houses erroneously broken into because the street address is wrong. Who was it? Was it Moxie? There was a security researcher. I love the name, security researchers, Moxie Marlinspike. He used to, but I don't remember it was him. So there was a researcher that used to make boxes that police would use to suck all the data off your phone before all the companies started encrypting it. And then he heard a story about a cop was having an argument with his girlfriend, so he sucked all the data off her phone.
Yep.
Because he could. And so now, for every good tool that comes out that's used legally, there's a chance someone will use it illegally.
Right.
And so by having that option available is frustrating. Yeah. And then going back to the Microsoft, the word bug, Tavis Ormandy from Google is a security researcher. He tweeted a couple of weeks ago. He was in the shower and had an epiphany about how to break into LastPass. And so he started his 90-day counter. So that typically what happens is a researcher finds a bug. They tell the company about the bug and typically give them 3 months, 6 months to fix the bug before they go public.
Right.
And in this Microsoft case, Microsoft never fixed it, so the guy went public. As soon as it goes public, the bad guys know about it, and so the company goes, oh, my God, we better fix it.
Right.
So Tavis found this bug, a very subtle bug in JavaScript on the website using the LastPass plugin, and told LastPass about it, and it was fixed in a day.
Yep.
So he didn't even have to tick the 90-day counter once. So that's the way it should work. The researcher finds a problem, because there's going to be problems. Researcher finds a problem, the company fixes it, and then before you ever knew there was a problem, you've already got the fix.
Nice. And before we go to the phones, let me remind you that if you want to talk to us on the forums, of course, in the poll discussion, you'll see 29 April 17. Hackers exploited Microsoft Word bug for months. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Ed did from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up? Ed, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I'm running Windows 10, and just in the last week, maybe, it seems that the cursor is freezing occasionally for about 2 or 3 seconds, and then it works again.
Okay.
And I wonder if you have any thoughts on what might be doing that and how to fix it.
Half a dozen reasons. Is this a, let's tick them all down. Is this a wireless mouse?
No, it's the touchpad.
Oh, it's a touchpad on a laptop?
Yes.
Okay. Are you one of those people who leans your palms on the laptop while you're doing stuff?
No, I've stopped doing that.
Okay. Hopefully that you haven't done any permanent damage to your laptop. But the other thing is, how much memory do you have?
I don't remember. I think it's 8.
Okay. Then it isn't that. You're making this very difficult for me here.
I'm sorry.
No, he says it. He's saying that it locks up, correct?
Well,
for two or three,
it freezes
for two or three seconds.
Yeah. And then
there is. I was running into that issue with another client's laptop, and I found out. His problem was the typing. When he was typing, sometimes the mouse would lock up for a few seconds, and then jump. So they have a utility that you can download that shuts that little mouse pad off temporarily while you're typing. Anytime you're typing, it turns off the little mouse pad, so there's not that delay of switching between your mouse pad and the keyboard.
It could think you're touching the trackpad.
Right, and I forget the name of the program, but if you look at turning off a mouse pad while typing.
This is not while I'm typing.
Yeah, but see, you could have your hand, what I'm trying to get at is, you could have your hand near it.
Oh.
And, just that presence and the delay between you actually doing something with it and, say, surfing the internet.
The other thing I might suggest is that you head out to, what manufacturer made your laptop?
It's Dell.
There you go. Good. Dell has a support website where you can put in your serial number and it'll tell you what the latest sets of drivers are. Microsoft came out with an update, the creator's update, a couple of weeks ago. And last week you may have gotten it because they've been slow rolling it out. And if this started happening after an update, it's very possible that the program, that the update changed your mouse driver.
Uh-huh.
So I would go to the Dell website, plug in your serial number, download the latest mouse driver for that specific machine. They will. The beauty of, about Dell and HP and a couple of others is that when you put your serial number in, they'll tell you exactly what drivers you need for that particular machine.
Okay.
So download the mouse driver and reinstall that driver.
Right. Well, it's actually not the mouse. It's the touchpad. But
I meant touchpad.
Yeah.
So, the touchpad will have its own driver. Well, it's the mouse and touchpad driver.
I see.
So do that and see if that solves the problem.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah. One of the issues we've been seeing for what now, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is whenever Microsoft releases an update, if your machine uses a proprietary driver that Microsoft A, doesn't recognize or just doesn't care about, it will replace that with a generic driver, which may not work as well. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. And Steve, doing yeoman work here. Not yeoman Rand, yeoman work.
I've met yeoman Rand.
You have met yeoman Rand. Has gotten the Soundbites website up. He's using his Mac,
the built-in camera,
and
I forgot my adapter to plug all the other cameras in.
Doing some streaming.
That's okay.
Thing.
They don't need to see my bald head.
Well, I can still turn the computer.
No. That's fine. Just get the glare off of Nick's forehead. You know.
Yeah, that's all.
So if I angle it a little bit this way, then the logo blocks your head.
Thank you. Perfect. Perfect.
As he called it, what, your solar sex machine?
That's right. It's a solar panel for a sex machine.
I still love
In
that
this
phrase.
Weather. Oh, never yeah. mind. So I'm going to Arizona for a while.
Yeah. Rejuvenated.
Right. Hackers spreading ransomware are getting greedier. In 2016, the average ransom demand to free computers hit with the infection rose to $1,077, up from $294 the year before. In addition, security companies have been detecting more ransomware infection attempts. In 2016, this figure jumped 36% compared to the prior year. That does not bode well for the public. Ransomware is notorious for taking over computers and essentially holding them hostage. To do so, the malicious code encrypts all the data inside and then demands a ransom, usually in Bitcoin, in exchange for releasing the machine. In 2016, consumers made up 69% of all ransomware infections, with only 31% targeting enterprises. So, really, consumers keep saying, well, nobody's after me. Yeah, 70% of the hits are on you, and they've increased significantly. More and more attacks are now jumping on the ransomware bandwagon and creating new ransomware families or modifying existing ones. Helping to fuel the ransom boom is the digital helping to fuel the ransomware boom is the digital black market. I should read what I write. Where hackers can sell ransomware kits for as little as $10 and for as much as $1,800, making it easier for other cyber criminals, or as we call them, script kiddies, to join in. Fortunately, ransomware attacks can be easily dodged. Consumers, for instance, should be wary about email spam, which remains the popular way for hackers to spread ransomware. Cybercriminals will often bundle their emails with attachments that can secretly download the ransomware onto a computer if the emails are opened. I've only had one cup of coffee today. That may be my problem.
Definitely.
In many cases, yeah.
But
in
it was
many
a
cases,
gallon cup.
Well, yeah, but it was only one. Psychologically, that's not enough. In many cases, the victim would receive a spam email designed to appear like an invoice or a receipt from a company. Bad actors will also spread ransomware through exploit kits or automated hacking tool sets that operate on tampered websites. The kits can work by scanning a victim's web browser for any unpatched software vulnerabilities and then exploiting them to serve ransomware. To prevent the infections, users should keep their computer software up to date. Hint for those of you still running Vista. That includes any publicly facing servers. In one case, hackers spread ransomware to a business by compromising a server through an unpatched vulnerability. Users should simply delete any suspicious looking emails, especially those that contain attachments or any links, and definitely turn off the preview pane in your email program. Turn it off.
Even if the attachment came from Aunt Jenny, it may not have.
Right.
So the bad guys fake the sender. So do not open attachments in email.
Like I say, the biggest thing I've told folks is right now, because quite often the screens will go dark or, you know, to a different color and saying that your machine has been compromised and, you know, you got to do this, this, and this. And people fall for that. They pick up the phone and start calling that. something, and that's a solution. What I always recommend folks to do, because this works for a good 75% of the time, is just immediately shut the machine off. Because they're trying to hoax, coerce you into, oh, we're into your machine, your file, we're holding them hostage, we're going to erase your whole machine and everything else. No, they haven't been let in yet. They want to make you believe they are into your machine and have you pay ransom.
Ransomware has gotten so bad that fake ransomware messages are now popular.
Yeah, and they're making money.
Yeah.
And so the best thing I can tell you folks to do is immediately, you see that screen, hit the off button. Your machine will recover. It will reboot. It'll say it didn't shut down properly, yada, yada, yada. That's okay.
Because you have a backup, right?
Right. But here's the other key thing, folks. When you go to start up your browser again, sometimes, depending on the browser you go, it'll say, restore what you were doing. Say no.
Say no.
Say no. Start fresh. Open up the websites that you want to go to. And just go from there, because if you restore what was already open, you're still linking yourself to that bad site.
The fake site, So the browsers are trying to be handy in reopening all the windows you had last time, including the fake virus message and the fake ransomware message.
Right. There are also some free tools on the internet that can decrypt certain ransomware infections. But, of course, the most important thing you can do, as we said, is back up your data. Steve is right. 34% of victims pay the ransom. That's a lot of people and a lot of money.
And
however,
it incentivizes the bad guys to ransom you again.
Well, right. And on top of that, no, let me finish this. This is important. 34% of victims pay the ransom, but only 47% of those get their files back. So you have a less than 50-50 chance of getting your files back, even if you pay the ransom. So don't pay the ransom.
And the other thing is quite often they don't even take your files because they haven't gotten into your machine if you're not paying. They wind up just taking $350. I know of three people right now that paid the $350, and they brought the machine in. I looked at it, and I says, it's gone.
There's
you were spoofed.
On
the only thing you had to do was turn it off.
Yep. Yep.
You mean, well, what do I do about getting it back? I go, good luck with that one. Well,
we've had our customers will dispute the charge with their credit card company. And then the bad guys will produce a fake contract you didn't sign, saying you signed it. And here's, he signed up for a six-month service contract.
Yeah.
We're not giving the money back.
Yep.
And that's frustrating.
Or
too.
Like the other one. And I had it happen again today, this week, on my phone for the business. They get you on, the phone rings, and they go, can you hear me okay? Because what they want you to do is say yes.
Right.
Because they're recording
it. Yep.
So then when I hear, can you hear me okay? I just go click.
And then they'll splice that into, do you authorize us to charge your credit card? And you said yes.
Yep.
So they.
I got one of those and I said, pretty well. You sure you can hear me? Kinda.
Well, one of the one of the others.
That's
they
when
call,
you have your air horn. Can you hear this?
Yeah, right.
Well, my line is usually, they'll sit there, can you hear me all right? I go, what can I do to help you?
Yep.
Because, you know, they're calling the business.
Although, I'll tell you, whenever I get a phone number for a phone call from a number that's blocked or, that I don't understand, I truly do answer the phone. Hi there, thanks for calling Soundbite. You're on the air. What's your question? Invariably, dead silence at the other end of the line, and then they hang up.
Attica State Prison, how can I direct your call?
that's better.
I like that.
You'll be using that one from now on.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a similar one going around now for gift cards. There's the gift ghost bot scam. You get a gift card, very common to have gift cards to restaurants and stores and whatnots. And many of them have a website where you can go online and check your balance. Well, now there's a bunch of bots on the net that are checking balances of every possible card number. And when they find a card that has a balance, they go and spend it.
Why not?
So don't keep gift cards without spending the money. Check your gift cards to make sure there's still money on them.
Yeah.
And because it's annoying to get to the restaurant and your gift card is
expecting
empty.
You know, there's 50 or yeah. whatever on it, and all of a sudden you're stuck with that, paying that extra 50 bucks or whatever.
So this attack peaked at the end of March, about a month ago, but it's still going. You know, this is now it's part of the background radiation of the internet.
Right.
They're
mm-hmm.
checking gift card balances, and they don't even have to physically have a gift card. They try every possible 16-digit number, and then 25-digit number, because some gift cards have different numbers.
Right. And it's a bot doing it, so once you've programmed the bot,
yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, it just sits there and does its thing. Yeah.
That's
and it's,
right.
It's completely impossible to get your money back, because you call the gift card company and say, I didn't spend it, and they said, prove it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, how do you prove you didn't spend it?
Because the number matches.
Yeah, the number matched.
That's
and
what
the money was
with.
Taken out. Yep.
Yep.
And so you're pretty
the
well.
The only chance you might have is if they, you know, wound up spending it somewhere else, that, you know, in another country or something else.
Well, where, that could have been online.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. you truly have no idea. You get a gift card true. To Amazon.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you are when
that's
you
true.
Spend that
yeah.
money on
no,
Amazon. Doesn't
point.
Matter.
Yep. Yep.
All right, anyway, if you've been hit by ransomware, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like our friend Pat did from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, Nick, I'm calling you back to follow up on my conversation last week where I said that your YouTube video would not show up on my Chrome
yep.
MLS, and I would see if I could figure out why, and I will tell you that this is something you would probably never have been able to help me with, because it never would have occurred to you. I was looking through my settings, and I discovered that I had never installed the proprietary, is it Codex or Codex?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I had never installed it. It never affected anything until that video of 422.
Huh.
Which, so
but as soon as I did install it, reset the computer, of course, and it worked fine.
So I wonder if YouTube changed something at the other end.
Well, that's why I was thinking it was, something changed, because I could see, I could watch 415. I could not watch 422. You said you didn't do anything different. I believe
right,
you.
Right.
And but again, there's things that we don't know. What's amazing is that it never affected any other videos. Not that I'm watching them all the time, but I watch a number of videos.
Right.
And so that might have been something that just kind of occurred at that time. And yeah.
Yep.
That changed. So anyway, I've got that installed. Now, would you recommend that I not install the Adobe Flash?
I am a huge proponent of never using Flash.
Yeah, because I had actually installed that, so I did two things. I uninstalled the Adobe Flash, and I did install the other. Then there's another one, Widevine Content Description Module. I hadn't installed that before either.
I think that might come with Chrome.
On the Chromium OS, under settings, you can either install or not install it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, you have to remember, Pat hasn't actually got a Chromebook. He's got an old laptop with Cloud Ready from Neverware on it.
Yeah.
Right, so it's going to be a little bit different from an out-of-the-box, a bespoke Chromebook.
Yeah. And Widevine
is found out today, I've got up to version 56.3 of
nice.
Chromium OS, and you're probably around 58 now, because I think I'm usually two behind.
Yeah, you are.
And that's one thing that Chrome, although now that I think about it, I don't know about Chrome on Chromium. The Chrome browser includes its own Flash and updates it by itself. So you don't need to install Flash separately. You don't need to watch your update separately. The Chrome browser does that itself on Mac and Windows, I would assume on
yes,
Chrome
it does it
too.
Here too.
Yeah.
So it's nice. I just uninstalled it and put the other things in. But
yep.
as I said, I don't think you ever would have thought about asking me if I had installed all the proper plugins or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be just straight HTML5. Right. You shouldn't have needed an extra plugin.
I'm actually going to go back and listen, because I think I did do that. I think I did say because you're actually using a version of Linux, there may be some codecs that you're missing. But I'll go back and look at that. Doesn't matter.
Well, either
doesn't
way,
matter.
As I said, when either I went way. And looked at my settings, I could see that for some reason I had never installed them.
Yeah.
And once I did, well, everything was fine.
Great.
Perfect. Good.
So
glad
sometimes there's little things that would never even occur to you to check on, And yeah. I really got lucky and just stumbled across it. So just for the, I'd like to believe the hundreds watch, listening, they say, gee, how'd Patrick make out with that fumble?
You know, many of us did not sleep this last week.
Yeah, I know. I felt bad for all those people, but I also realized that I have great imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody cares. I just thought I'd bring it full circle for you guys.
Well, thanks for relieving our anxiety.
Yeah,
Patrick.
But it's still,
appreciate it. Thanks.
I believe that you got it. There. Okay. Thanks. And we are going to be, let's see, we're coming to our Rochester Googles again, right?
That's right. Googles is the first Thursday of every month at St. John's Meadow. We sit and discuss things Google, and you are always welcome to come and join. It starts at 7 o'clock, at St. John's Meadow, and you can check out the, Facebook group or the Google Plus group, and that'll tell you where and when and everything else.
Okay.
All right.
And
thanks, Pat.
Human memory is the thing that recalled that for me, so I'm very, very pleased about that.
Nice. There you go. I put everything in Google because I don't have a memory anymore.
I know. This is going to be an ongoing battle.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like a ping pong game.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Google is changing the way its core search engine works to help stop the spread of fake news and hate speech. The changes involve different measures for ranking sites and people checking that results are accurate. Google said the changes should thwart attempts to abuse its algorithms that let extremists promote their content. Google was criticized last year for giving prominence to groups seeking to deny that the Holocaust took place. Google said it was making structural changes to tackle the new ways people had found to trick its algorithms. In particular, many groups and organizations were using fake news to help spread blatantly misleading, low-quality, offensive, or downright false information. To combat this, Google has added new metrics to its ranking systems. It should help to stop false information from entering the top results for particular search terms. In addition, it has updated the guidelines given to the thousands of human raters it uses to give feedback on whether results were accurate. The guidelines include examples of low-quality and fake news websites, help them pick out misleading information, unexpected offensive results, hoaxes, and unsupported conspiracy theories. Google has done its best to play down the extent of fake news and hateful material, or what it prefers to call low-quality content, in search results. The company keeps repeating that this affects only 0.25% of queries, but the fact that searches such as "Is Obama planning a coup?" or even "Who invented stairs?" produce such questionable results meant it had to act. These searches threw up a prominent snippets box telling you that, yes, President Obama was planning a coup. Hint, he's not. Or that stairs had been invented in 1948. Hint, they were not. Now, both boxes have gone, and Google's almighty algorithm has been tweaked so that such content is less likely to rise to the top. What's interesting is that a company that has put so much faith in technology solutions is turning to 10,000 humans to try to make search a better experience. This giant focus group, which tests out changes in the search algorithm, has been told to pay more attention to the source of any pages rated highly in results, looking around the web to see whether they seem authoritative and trustworthy. Questions are bound to be raised about whether this panel, which Google says is representative of its users, is impartial and objective. Ben Gomez, a VP of engineering at Google and a veteran who's been wrestling with the intricacies of search since arriving as one of its earliest employees, believes that it is now on the path to getting this right. But with so many people trying to game the system, the battle to make search true and fair will never be over. Google also planned to change its autocomplete tool, which suggests terms to allow users to more easily flag up troubling content. Do you still believe everything you read on the internet? Give us a call. or just hit yourself with a 2x4. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, what was interesting is on Google search results, it would say possibly fake news.
Yeah.
On Facebook search results, it would say disputed.
Right.
Which isn't as accurate.
It is
not. I can dispute that the sun goes around the earth.
Yeah.
And doesn't mean I'm right, but I can dispute it.
Mm-hmm. You can dispute it. That's right.
Yeah. But so Google was always going a little harder to try to point out fakes than Facebook has been.
Which is good. You know, that's the way, you know, you got to have, it's hard enough.
But the problem
sorting
these days
out
is
the stuff that is legit, what isn't.
Right. And there are so many news sites, fake news sites that report things that, you go to, you're Obama.
They skew it their way.
And so, you know, journalism is supposed to get, you know, three independent sources. Well, this website and this website and this website all say this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're all wrong, and they probably all got their information from this other website.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, what the Russian hacking, was it four Canadians and a Russian were recently arrested? And they
sounds like a start of a joke. Four Canadians and a Russian were recently arrested
for election tampering and fake news. And there were 1,000 fake websites. Well, 1,000 websites created for the sole purpose of putting out fake news stories.
Yep.
To discredit the Democrats during our last election. So now, what are we going to do when there's now provable evidence that a foreign country influenced our election?
Well, nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Is what's going to happen. But that's a separate issue. The reality here is that we do find that people have become extremely polarized. Because when you're on the internet, you tend to only look at websites that reinforce your bias.
Yeah.
So if you are pro-Trump or anti-Trump, you only look at the pro-Trump sites or the anti-Trump sites. And the more outrageous, the more it feeds your bias and the more you want to believe it. You know, Donald Trump is the Antichrist. Donald Trump is the God King. It doesn't matter. Whatever feeds your bias, we tend to believe. And most people don't ever look at the other side of the story, so they never have their bias challenged. And when someone, for example, in Facebook, to take a completely random example,
mm-hmm.
does challenge their bias, it just makes them angry.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
stupid.
It is what it is. It mm-hmm. is what it is. And yeah. But what Google and Facebook now are trying to do, because they don't want to be sued. Yep. That's simple enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, was it Chobani just sued
Alan Jones
yep. for the statements he made?
Yep.
And I saw a headline, you know, Bill O'Reilly just got fired for sexual harassment, multiple accounts of sexual harassment, alleged sexual harassment, I guess we have
right.
to say. And I saw a news story that he's the victim of the media. He didn't do anything wrong. He's a victim of the media.
Right.
Because he's apparently on the right side and everyone else is on the wrong side.
Yes, yes, that's how it works. Yeah. But he's now doing it online and he'll get billions of listeners and make a lot of money at it. So
which
it
kind of always brings me back to Howard Stern. I grew up on Howard Stern.
Right.
And
is he still even on?
Well, he's on satellite. And so he took his audience to Sirius.
Oh, Sirius.
When he got fired from the radio station for saying the crazy thing he did last time, whatever it was. Whatever crazy thing you say.
Yeah.
Then, you know.
Shock Jack.
Anyways. Yeah. And so I read this interesting statistic about the people that listen to him. You know, most people listen to him to see what he's going to say next. Whether they love him or hate him. They hate him. They'll listen to him to be outraged at what he says next.
Yep.
And if they love him, they listen to him to be amused by what he says next.
Yep.
And so that's why, you know, these people get such high ratings is the, you know, the pros and the cons are both listening.
Yep. And that's true of a station that we used to be on.
Where are you calling? Mm-hmm.
Used to have a manager who would say the same thing about his main shock jock.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. People were listening.
Yep.
And that's what counts. Except the problem, of course, with the shock jock is you have to be more and more shocking every time.
Yeah.
Right? And so at some point you're going to say something that will get you knocked off the air at least for a little while. And so if you're going to, folks, do me a favor. I don't really care what about you. Do me a favor. Before you post that clearly outrageous thing that your great aunt sent you.
Or repost something you just read in your feed.
Right. Please, please check at least Snopes. Snopes.com. Check to see if it is in fact real. The other day the Eddie Murphy death thing came out. Well, first
Eddie Murphy's brother died.
It was Eddie Murphy's brother.
And they look a lot alike.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But that hoax has been around for about 10 years. And it's the very first thing on the Snopes page. All you had to do was type in Snopes.com and you would see it was fake.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you had to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the one about the Croatian prime minister?
No.
There were bikini shots of the Croatian prime minister, and she's very attractive and fills out a bikini very well. And and turns out, no, that was...
photoshopped?
No, it was Coco, Ice-T's wife.
Oh, Ice-T's wife.
Oh, jeez.
And apparently, you know, the Croatian prime minister got Googled to death. And
Right.
So now we know where Croatia is.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, she's done a lot of things. She's the first female prime minister of Croatia. And it was, you know, she's done a lot of good things. But no, that wasn't her in that super revealing bikini.
Okay. Well, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from nowhere.
Sorry.
Nowhere
we
at
lost
all.
Him.
Dave hung up.
Dave's
hang in
here.
There, Dave. We got to you. We did.
Call back.
He'll call back. I'm sure he will. But in the meantime, yeah, there's so much fake news. I never post anything that I haven't verified.
Okay.
And I'm not even a journalist. I mean, this radio show is not journalism. I think you should be aware of that by now. Back to Dave. Dave, you there this time?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Dave. What's up?
That.
No worries.
Glad you guys are here today.
Thank you. What do you need?
I got four machines on our home network, and there's a 2 weeks ago, I have two of them that can't see each other, but they still see all the other two machines. So, file and print sharing is on, network discovery is on. I don't know where to go from there, why these two machines just can't see each other, but they can see the other one.
What is the operating system on these machines?
Windows 10 on all of them.
Okay.
And I'll apologize, I don't have them in front of me at this moment.
That's okay.
And they're all within the same group?
Yes. And we're not using the home group, we're using just the network and file sharing.
That's fine.
Can you ping them? Do you know how to do a ping?
I do, but I have not tried that. It just comes up with that error when you try clicking open up network and you click on that computer, it finally times out so they can't see it. Make sure the computer's on the network.
Yeah. Try a ping, or even in the run command, do the // and the IP address. That bypasses network browsing and sees if it can talk to the computer straight over IP.
Right. So what you need to do first is open up a command line.
Yep.
And type ping space and the IP address of one of those two computers.
Yep. Okay.
And see if you get a connection. If you do, then the likelihood is, now they can see other machines can't see them, and they can't see each other. Is that correct?
They can see other machines, the other machines can see them, it's just these two of them don't see each other.
Oh, other machines can see them.
Yep. I'm at a loss.
And there's the network discovery. Network discovery, and they're all on private network, not public?
Private.
Okay. So those are all the wrong answers.
Yeah, no kidding. Let me suggest first, and I hate giving this answer, turn off network discovery and then turn it on again.
Turn it on. I think I did try that, but not on both machines.
Yeah, try it on both machines.
The question to that is, if I kill that network and rebuild a new network, probability may fix it by rebuilding, or not so much?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
If I delete this network, kill the network, and then rebuild the network, do you think that might fix the problem?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it will, no. Make sure file sharing is turned on those two machines.
Yep. Yeah.
You're saying, yeah, you should, or yeah, you did?
Yeah, I did. They are on.
Okay.
And they're able to see also the other computers. The other computers are able to see them.
Well, but that's my point. If oh, dear. Okay. So you're sure that they're in the same work group and you've allowed... have you checked the firewall on those two machines to make sure that they are allowing file sharing to go through?
And what was the first part of that?
The firewall.
Yeah. Yeah. I've disabled the firewall, and that's why I'm calling you guys.
You've tried all the easy stuff, and don't call us.
That's right. We only know the easy things. So if you were to open up a window, and in the top of that window type in /// and the IP address of the other machine, you still don't get it? You still don't see it?
I will try that. As I said, I'm not in front of my machine, so that's
no.
I haven't tried singing the machine. Itself.
Okay, try that, because...
Do both machines have different physical machine names? If they're both the same, that could be confusing it.
That's true. The
and
computer...
And then the IP address would make it work, because that has to be unique.
Exactly. So what you would do is go to My Computer, checks properties... and there's a computer name tab, and it will say full computer name. And
They are two different. I think I remember sometime back in the day, if your computer name was too long or something. Does anybody remember something like that?
Yeah, 15 characters was the maximum back in the day.
And there are special characters you can't use. And there's some characters you can, but probably shouldn't. Like, you know, space, you can use, but probably shouldn't. Use an underscore instead if you really need to space two words out.
Right. Basically, it was the old DOS rules for file names.
Right. Well, I'll try starting with the basic of pinging and see if I could at least do that and go from there.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, thanks. Your time. You guys have an excellent day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, well, that music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life, but you're getting to do it again because, you know, I don't think you were smart enough to have learned from that first hour, so you're going to get another chance to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is the top of the hour. And you've just finished the first of 2 hours of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side. Don't go anywhere important.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, I'm not blaming it on the clock. I'm blaming it on you.
Why me?
Because I can. And we're back to the phones and our next call.
Wait a minute.
Steve and I were having a discussion, and you rudely interrupted it to say we're back on the air. Big deal. We were in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah, but remember, who controls the board?
I know who controls the board. But you don't control time.
Now, my worry is that someone watching the stream can read lips.
That's right. From now on, we'll be talking like this.
Although it is hard because we both have mustaches and beards. I've heard that makes it much harder.
Yeah, that makes it harder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
I used to have a friend come over and lift up my mustache to read my lips. And it's kind of a skeevy little thing to do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hello, guys. Happy Saturday.
You too.
You guys are having way too much fun.
Yes, we are.
That's good. Anyway, my question is about Google Drive and the suite and all that kind of stuff. I have some people that make a document and post it, a schedule, actually, and for reference, I usually scan it so that I can look at it later instead of trying to input it all again on a calendar or something like that. I kind of just like to reference back to the material. Is there a way to put that in the Google Drive? I know you can PDF it. Now, does that count against your spot on the drive and that type of stuff, or is there a easier way to make it a Google thing, if you will?
Okay, a couple of things. First, how are they sending it to you? How are they getting it to you?
Oh, it's usually just posted on a bulletin board type thing.
And it's a document or a PDF or what?
It's usually just a document. I guess I could PDF it myself.
Well, if it's a Word document, for example, and you can download it as a Word document, then you can upload it to Google Drive and tell Google Drive to translate it into Google's own format, and then it will not count against your quota.
Okay, so there is a... Okay, all right, I understand. So I'm basically resaving it, as you will?
Essentially, yeah.
And in the Google Drive settings, the checkbox says convert uploaded files to Google Docs format.
Right, and like I said, I'm trying to work myself into, you know, using that platform instead of using the Microsoft stuff and stuff like that. I'm finding it a little easier to use and access, especially being able to get it anywhere, where I'm on a computer at least, and stuff like that. Okay, so there is a way to resave it then, I guess, if I can even get it in some other type of form, even without me having to rescan it myself and everything else. If I get it sent to me in a Word document, then just convert it to there, and then it doesn't count against me. Or I could have hundreds of them.
You can have. I have over 15,000 documents in Google Drive, and it's using. Well, I have some PDFs and some pictures. That's using up about 3 gig of my 19 gig space.
Mm-hmm.
But the 15,000 documents are using zero space. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that you could do, and this is what we did with the Soundbites calendar, is you can share a calendar. You can create a calendar in Google Calendar that is shareable by others.
Okay.
And then those people can add that calendar to their Google Calendar. So, for example, when I look at my Google Calendar, I also see whatever's on the Soundbites calendar.
Okay.
And you can set that so that other people have read-only so they can see the calendar. Or you can give them read-write so they can make changes.
You can control it.
You can control that. The person that publishes the calendar can control that.
Right. You don't want somebody just putting arbitrary things up on
their own personal stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But now it works very much like you may have seen that you can add, what's the company? It'll come to me in a second because I've got it loaded. There's a company, FS.net. It's their release schedule for movies.
Okay.
So I've added that, and I know that yesterday How to Be a Latin Lover, Slight, and The Circle opened.
Okay.
And that shows up in my calendar. The Christian holidays show up in my calendar. The holidays in the United States show up in my calendar. Soundbites calendar.
Your calendar's got to be full.
My calendar is pretty busy, but
look at all the pretty colors.
It's in multiple colors, so I know that my stuff is in one color and other people's stuff are in other colors, so it's easy enough to see, and you can add as many of those things as you have a tolerance yeah. for. And next Friday, Guardians of the Galaxy opens, by the way. And
Number two.
And volume two. And you can add whatever is important to you. You can also hide them. So you can add it to your calendar, but hide it until you want to see it. So I could, if I wanted to, hide, for example, the Soundbites calendar. And then, you know, if I say, oh, what's going on in the Soundbites calendar this week, I can click it on and it shows up, and then yeah. I can make it go away again. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can do. It just takes somebody to set it up.
Yeah, and sometimes, depending on...
And it's not that hard to set up.
Right.
Other things, if you've got dates that you're planning and all that, they'll let you link it to and add it onto your calendar, which I find very extremely yep. easy. You yep. know, and
you know, that was another question. If you guys had a recommendation of a to-do type program or task manager type program.
Right. Well, Google Calendar does have a tasks section.
Okay, I think I've seen that.
I've not used it much, I'll be very honest. Yeah. I use a program that sits on one of my private drives that I use instead. But the Google Calendar does have one. There are lots of add-ons for the Google Calendar under more tools and extensions.
Plus, if you
I never thought to look there.
But
actually.
The thing of it is, yeah. though, is if you've got a smartphone, you can just download an app to that, and it's a to-do list, and it can mm-hmm. remind you day to day as you open up your phone. Oh, I got to do this, this, and this.
One of the most popular ones I've heard of is called Todoist.
Yeah,
and okay. it works on all the platforms.
Right.
I'll look into the play around with that more of that Google stuff, like you said, with the calendars and things like that, and see if I can find something else that might work for me in there. You know, again, I'm not a high level, but
but you can play around. Okay. You play around with it, learn, and see what works for you.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And that Todoist is one of the things that will be that you can add to Chrome. There's a bunch of them that do to-do lists or whatever you want to call them.
Okay, great. Thanks for the information.
Yep. Good luck.
iOS has a reminder app built in where you can set reminders and to-do lists. And I saw this joke about someone who really likes to check off to-do lists. And so they have a to-do list, you know, get up, you know, wash teeth, brush face.
Right.
So I checked off 15 things on my to-do list today.
Yep. Got up. That's a good one.
Yep.
Some days I don't. But yeah, the big
get
thing
dressed
about,
is the other way.
Right. Maybe it's not every day.
Yeah, we might not be wearing pants. You know,
that's right. On the days that I don't leave the house, I'm in sweats all day. I don't.
Yeah. Well, I got my wife hooked on to do everything on Google Calendar now because she still likes the regular calendar that she can quick grab, but she likes the feature now. I showed her how to put stuff into the Google Calendar that whether it's my stuff or hers, put it in there, and whether it's on her computer or on her phone, she can pull it up. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yep.
So,
And you can easily, like I said earlier, you could have your calendar, she could have her calendar, and you can put each of your calendars on the other person's calendar, and so you can see what they're doing easily and quickly, and it's a very nice... it's a very nice add-on feature. Companies use it a lot. They have a company calendar that you can add, you can put staff meetings and all... Things like
Although that can be a little bit tricky now, because when you create an event, you have to make sure you put it on the right calendar. You put it on your calendar, the wife's calendar, the kid's calendar, the church calendar.
Right.
Yeah. That's a very common question we get all the time in our stores. I created an event on my calendar, and it doesn't show up on my computer. Well, because you have your Google calendar on your computer, and you have your Yahoo calendar on your iPad.
Right, and you got to pick one specific calendar,
or show them all on all, and then you have to weed through them.
Right, and the other thing is that when you do add an event, you have a choice of making it public or private, and you can then say, "Well, here's a private event. They can see that I have blocked that time off, but that's all they can see. They can't see who it is and what it is." Or anything else. So,
and you can invite people to an event you create by email address,
Right.
And then that event automatically shows up on their calendar, and they can say yes or no, and that shows up on your calendar.
Right. Right. So it's very cool. To the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon. I just wanted to tell you I see that Hotspot Shield is available on Mozilla Firefox.
Nice!
It is there. I checked it out, and it is there. So if people are running Firefox, it is available to them.
Nice!
Other question I had is there any special setup to this, or does it just run itself?
You pretty much either turn it on or turn it off.
Okay.
There are things you can do with it, yes. So, for example, one of the things that I can do once it's up and running, it tells me I'm connected, and it tells me I'm browsing incognito from optimal location. That is to say, it picks a good, fast server near you.
Mm.
But if I want to, I can be in the UK... or other places, most of the other places I can't get to unless I pay for it.
Okay.
Right, but I can go to some other places and do some other things, so.
So it's pretty simple, straightforward.
Yeah.
On or off.
Right. So basically it's on or off.
Okay.
But I have, you can do some things. There's also, if you use the Opera browser, it also has its own VPN server system.
Built in.
And that does allow you to do more because they own the VPN. And if you use Opera, it's free to use and et cetera, et cetera. But it's very cool. The ability to get online as a an unknown person. And, of course, it's going to be a little bit slower than direct connection.
So I wouldn't want to run it when I'm doing my video streaming.
You would not want to run it during video streaming. But for most stuff, now I will tell you that I was testing it out at home the other day. And I did it with both Hotspot Shield on Chrome and in Opera Browser. I went to YouTube when it was on and played a bunch of stuff. And it all came through fine. There was a tiny bit of hesitation in one or two videos, but most of what I looked at was just fine. So clearly, both Hotspot Shield and whatever one Opera is using were very fast and very easy. It's pretty cool. It's Surf Easy. That's what it's called. Surf Easy. And it's actually a proxy, not a real VPN. But
I was reading this wrong. So it says free download and then the E-Lite version.
No, not E-Lite.
What's the difference between Lite and free? No, it's not the E-Lite version. It's the Elite version that you pay for. That
right,
has more features.
Exactly. and so that's Hotspot Shield. But so both of them are good. Both of them are pretty fast. There are, and I will always say this, proxies are always going to be slower than a direct connection, but in seriously, not by much. I've had one or two little glitches here today as I'm using it, but it's the middle of a Saturday afternoon, and one or two little glitches in the middle of a Saturday afternoon, that ain't bad.
Nothing.
That ain't bad. So yeah, I would suggest give them a shot, and all you need to do is turn it on. Done.
Okay. Thanks so much. Like I said, I just want to let them know it was available.
I appreciate that.
For Firefox. So
good to know. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Yep. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that it is available on Firefox. That's nice.
And it looks like with Hotspot Shield, they have versions for Mac and Windows separately. So it doesn't protect just your browser. It protects everything you do on the Internet on your computer.
Nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 19 minutes after this, the hour, Sound Bites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415.
I got to share sort of a humorous story.
Uh-oh, here we go.
All right. You know, people bring in the machines. And, you know, of course, they got to sit there and tell you the whole life history.
Oh, man.
Some people tell you too much. Some people don't tell you enough.
Well, this one particular one started getting into, brought the machine in and started describing, well, they do this and this, and they started getting into detail with the programs. I'm thinking, I don't know that program. They could tell me it does this, this, and this. I really don't know. And then they started getting into doing that they do this, this, and this, and this. And this went on for a good 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So then we get to, so what's wrong with the machine? Well, it won't boot. I'm thinking, I felt like saying, so what the hell? Your past 5 minutes of explaining everything you did and how you did it in the machines have any relativity to what you're bringing the machine in for? Did I miss something? It's like, huh?
Yeah.
And, you know,
I still like the guy that left the computer outside your shop, called you 3 days later and asked if it was done yet.
Yeah.
Well, we were closed then. Yeah, I left it outside. How am I supposed to? It didn't even leave a note.
Yeah, no, I didn't know who it is. What was wrong with it?
I hid it in the bushes because you weren't there. Well, yeah. You hit it so good, I never found
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But, no, the ones that get me, though, is, you know, right now, you know, they can bring them in and we go do a cleanup. But when they're running, say, Windows 7, Windows Vista, Windows XP,
yep,
or even Windows 8, you know, and you try to tell them, all right, yes, I can clean it up, but that's where this service ends. Because the minute you take it back home, there are going to be holes. And depending on where you surf, wherever you go, well, I go to these safe sites. Yeah, but they can also get attacked. There are no guarantees that once you take it home and you hook it up, and because I had one person say, but I was only on for maybe 10, 15 minutes. It takes less than 2 minutes to reinfect a machine.
Takes less than 2 seconds.
You know, depending on where you're going.
Right.
You know, I have no control of that, folks. And it's an old operating system. Microsoft is not supporting those anymore. Sorry, there's nothing I can do to, you know, totally block that. It is what it is. So if you want to continue using those older operating systems, well, can I get updates for Windows 7? No. Not unless you're a big corporation and want to pay for it.
Right.
Well, but it's old. I don't want to pay for it. Exactly. That's why they're not supporting it anymore. So when you update those machines, they're, and I think Steve would agree too, there no shop around here can guarantee that you're not going to get reinfected. And I don't care how many spyware programs or anything else you put on. I've got another one right now that went to the other extremes. They have two different versions of McAfee, as far as the scan and the internet protection. They also have Norton on there, the scan and the internet protection. They've got CC Cleaner on there. All this stuff, it's like, no wonder the machine is running slow. Mm-hmm. It's doing so much double tasking of protecting the machine, it can't do what it wants to do.
Right.
And there are so many insidious scams these days, real viruses flying around,
yeah,
that we can virtually guarantee you will be attacked again.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it seems like some folks go from one extreme to the other. No protection Or they put so much on there that it slows the machine down to a crawl. And then they wonder, why is it so slow?
We used to be able to say you don't go to the seedy parts of town and you won't get mugged.
Yeah.
So on the computer, don't go to the porn sites or the pirate sites and you won't get viruses.
Yeah.
Well, now the new threat are the fake ads. And they come from an ad on legitimate sites. Forbes has been a big target. BBC, CNN, CNET, legitimate websites, Facebook. The ads can have an infection in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so people always say, well, I didn't go anywhere bad. You don't have to.
No. They have what they call hover points. Yep. All you have to do is hover over some point on the screen, and boom, you're infected.
And many of the ads, you don't even need to click anything.
Right.
The web page displays, the ad displays, and it runs the malicious code.
Yep.
You never clicked on anything. So you don't have to download. But then we find all these people that have, 16 downloads of the fake cleaning program.
Yeah.
Well, that means you clicked on it 16 times and downloaded it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So, we can't. I can only do so much.
My computer said it was infected and told me to click here to download. Don't!
Yeah.
Don't click there.
Don't click there. It's constant. People are getting bombarded all the time, and they just keep clicking. Mm-hmm. How do you stop someone from just clicking? I haven't found the magic formula yet.
Well, it's the same. Once one person brought it in, and they wonder why, it's not printing to their printer.
Yeah.
So... I get the machine clicked up and then the laptop, and I go and look at their print queue. And evidently, they are a very impatient person because they had over 76 queued up
the same
document.
The same file,
Well, it didn't print, so I hit print again. And they kept hitting it, and they did it, kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And it got so queued up, and there was an issue with the printer because it was clicked as being offline.
And then you get the call, why does my printer keep printing the same document? Well, you kind of told it to.
Yeah.
There's a weird thing going on at my house, and I think it's me. No, there's a weird thing
going on. Picnic?
Yeah, picnic. Yeah, there's a weird thing going on in my house.
Wife, and it better be you, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. She's on a Mac. I'm on Linux. And it seems that sometimes, but not always... when one of us prints, unless we power cycle the printer, the other one cannot print. It is so weird, and it's random. I mean, she can print for 3 days, I can print for 3 days, and then all of a sudden it happens. We power cycle the machine, and everything is fine. I don't get it. I don't understand it. We don't have to touch the computers, either one of them.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You're probably using LPR because you're Linux.
I am.
Do you know what she's using?
But it doesn't happen AFP? All the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen with any specific document.
It's not the printer trying to switch protocols or switch ports. Is one wireless, one wired?
No, they're both wireless. And I have no wire into that computer. Into that printer. And I don't know. It's just weird. Just every once in a while, I get a text message that says, cycle the printer. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what she's trying to do, and then it works. She doesn't even have to resend the document. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I get it. It's fine. And I don't understand it.
Hmm.
But you know what? It's printing, and I don't have to understand it. And, I've really gotten to the point where the only thing I print is the news for this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it. I don't print anymore. Although I did. I printed out the practical. I'm giving a practical exam my students for 10 weeks.
Is that better than impractical?
It will be impractical for some of them. For 10 weeks, my students have been building websites and servers and clients and stuff in virtual memory. And then this week, they essentially get to do it all again without any documentation except what they bring with them in what's called a site book. System administrators who are listening know what a site book is. Every time you add, remove, or change something on your computer, you put it into the site book.
It's a log sheet.
It's essentially a log sheet, but it's more than that. It's everything you did, every command you did to do it, and what the result was, and why you did it. So now I'm going to say to them, go in and build these machines. If they're... site books are good, this exam should take them even if they're slow typists, half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If their site books are not good, I could give them a week. They won't get it done.
Mm. So, in other words, it's just like when I was doing COBOL or anything, it's just program notes.
It's just
everything that you put in there, why you did it.
And the better your notes are, the better you can recreate it.
Documentation.
Yep. So, for example, I bought my last desktop off of Woot. So it was ridiculously cheap. It's refurbished. I got a 3-year warranty, so it'll be fine. And I set it up and wrote everything down it did. And then it had this horrible issue that it took me a week to resolve. But once I resolved it, I put that in my site book. Then the machine died. And I called up the company that was the, I forget what it's called, but it's the name of the company, but it's the company that's doing the warranty. They sent me a new machine. I had exactly the same issue. This time the solution took me almost 8 seconds. Because I had it written in my site book.
What took you so long? Slacker.
Booting up my Chromebook took 8 seconds to get to the Google Doc that had the answer.
Yep.
So these site books, and you write down everything. I don't care how Mickey Mouse or niddly piddly it seems. Write it down, and of course, how you organize it is important, and et cetera, et cetera. But I learned over decades that that's what real system administrators do. And the reality is, we are all system administrators now.
Unfortunately,
right. It's a little different with my Chromebook. Google keeps track of all that. I buy a new Chromebook. All I have to do is sign in. It downloads everything to it and makes it right again.
And actually, these days, we're all multi-systems administrators.
Right.
Because our desktops and our tablets typically run different OSs in our phones.
Right.
Even if you're running, you know, Windows on your computer and Windows on your phone, it's a different version of Windows.
Yep.
Is anyone running Windows on their phone?
Yes, I actually know somebody who has a Windows phone. I will not mention his name because it would embarrass him. But I do know somebody who runs Windows on his phone and is very proud to be doing so.
He's the one, huh?
He's the one. But yeah, there's a whole group of things that you need to do as a system administrator. Keep a site book so you know how you set up your machine in case you ever have to redo it. Back up. Let me say this again. Back up. For those of you in the back row, back up. You cannot have enough backups. Two things I always say. If you're a real system administrator, A, you are not paranoid enough. And B, you cannot have enough backups.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot. So, you know, you want to keep one local. You want to keep one on the web. You want to keep one in an alternate location, which could also be on the web somewhere.
Would you cry if you lost everything on your computer? Does that mean my pictures? Yes, everything on your computer.
Well, that's why, you know, when I'm always telling folks to back up. Don't worry about backing up the programs. You know, it's usually an indication that they need to be reinstalled anywhere. Something went amok.
Right.
So now it's tedious. You have to re-download them rather than having disks.
Right.
But the thing of it is, though, it's the documents, the pictures, any music libraries that you paid for and all that other stuff that you couldn't live without. You know, just back that all up to a separate drive, even a flash thumb drive, you know, and also a hard drive. I back everything up to the Google Cloud.
Yep.
You know, all my photos are up there, and I love it because I can take photos, you know, that I've had for a long time. I must have at least about 8,000 photos up there. And that's no lie. And I don't pay a penny for it. And I can access them, whether I'm on my computer, my tablet, my phone, wherever I go. I could go out west, log onto somebody's computer into my Chrome account, open up iPhoto, the Google Photo, and there they all are.
Yep.
And I can show folks. I mean, and they're backed up and guaranteed. And a lot of them, be honest with you, I'd be very hurt if I lost them. Because a lot of them are very precious to me and mean a lot. So, you know, take the time, folks. That's the thing. You got to make the time. I can't, and I'm sure Steve has heard this too. The countless number of folks that will come in and say, well, I meant to back up.
I hear it all the time, you know, and it breaks my heart.
You know, I meant to bring it back, but, you know, if that hard drive is dead and not even spinning up, it's going to cost you some serious money to get those back.
That's right.
So, you, like the old Pram oil filter, which a lot of our audience don't probably even remember. There used to be a guy on TV. He'd sit there and have an oil filter in his hands and these wrenches. And he goes, with the filter, you can pay me now? And then he held up the wrenches that he'd need to fix your machine, your car with, or you can pay me later.
Yep. That's right.
$20 for an oil change, or you know, $1,000 to rebuild your engine.
Yeah, right. So you know,
$1,000. I want to know your mechanic.
Yeah, really.
Well, because that was the year of the Pram.
Oh yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah. That makes sense.
So, folks, seriously, take the time to back up those documents, and you know the photos and everything else. We can't stress. We've been saying this for decades. Backup, backup, backup. And Nick has been preaching, you'd never have too many backups. And that's the truth.
Yep.
Because one could go down. It's just, well, I burned them all to CD. That's no guarantee.
Right.
Yep.
Put them on CD, that's good. Put them on thumb drive also, that's better.
Make sure it's the
and
actual.
And have it somewhere on the internet, that's even best.
Yeah, make sure it's the actual file, not a shortcut to the file.
Okay, that's a big one. Not going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 44 minutes after the hour, guess what?
Huh.
We are Soundbites.
Really?
Is that unbelievable or what?
It's amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Oh, here's... After Microsoft officials dismissed evidence that more than 10,000 Windows machines on the internet were infected by a highly advanced National Security Agency backdoor, private researchers are stepping in to fill the void. The latest example of this open source self-help came on Tuesday with the release of a tool that can remotely uninstall the double pulsar implant. On late Friday afternoon, Microsoft officials issued a one-sentence statement saying that they doubted the accuracy of multiple internet-wide scans that found anywhere from 30,000 to slightly more than 100,000 infected machines. Over the weekend, last weekend, Below Zero Day released the results of a scan that detected 56,586 infected Windows boxes, an 85% jump on the 30,626 infections the security firm found 3 days earlier. Both numbers are conservative. At this conservative end of widely ranging results from scans independently carried out by other researchers over the past week. On Monday, Rendition InfoSec published a blog post saying that double pulsar infections were on the rise and that company researchers are confident the scan results accurately reflect real-world conditions. On Tuesday, security firm Countercept released an update to the double pulsar detection script. It now allows people anywhere on the internet to remotely uninstall the implant from any infected machine. Think about this. Microsoft is denying the thing exists, so the people who are finding it have now written code that removes it for them so that they don't even have to do anything about it. Just amazing. Detecting double pulsar involves sending a series of SMB, which stands for server message block, queries to internet-facing computers. By modifying 2 bytes of the query, the same person can simply remove the infection. The script isn't the only way to clean compromised devices, of course. The big thing about the ultra-stealthy double pulsar program is it writes no files to the hard drives of the computers it affects, which means that all you have to do is restart the computer. And it's gone. But double pulsar is a weapons-grade implant released by the shadow brokers, a mysterious person or group that since August has leaked top-secret documents and software later confirmed to have been stolen from the NSA. In an unusual series of events that have not been explained yet, Microsoft patched the vulnerabilities double pulsar exploits exactly 1 month prior to the release of double pulsar. The implant provides a stealthy and reliable way for infected machines to communicate with any attacker-controlled command and control server. In a statement issued Tuesday, a Microsoft representative said, customers with up-to-date software are protected from this malware, which requires an already compromised machine to run. We encourage customers to practice good computing habits online, including exercising caution when clicking on links to web pages, opening unknown files, or accepting file transfers. Of course, a computer that didn't install the patch that Microsoft released in March could easily be compromised. So are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. This isn't so bad for individual computers because many people turn them off late at night. But server people have this. There's a thing in servers called uptime, the number of days since it was last turned on.
We're going to brag about our uptime.
We brag about our uptime. And therefore, people
Damn, mine's only 21 days.
Yeah, many people don't turn these things off. And therefore, anything like Double Pulsar that takes hold can live there for months, if not years. I had a kid who worked for me who had his own personal server. I would not have allowed this on one of my servers. But he got upset when the counter rolled over in, like, what was it? It was like 3 years or 4 years, however many days.
When it went from 999 days?
Yes, whatever it was, yeah. Wow. And he was very upset that he suddenly lost all his time. I said, well, this gives you a chance to reboot and move, you know, up about 11 versions of Linux at this point. But people don't, pay attention.
And this kind of goes against what we were talking about earlier. When a researcher finds a bug or a hole or an exploit or a vulnerability, they tell the company and let them fix it. We have seen both from the NSA leaks and from the CIA leaks that neither of those companies do that.
Right.
They find problems, they hold on to them, wait to exploit them themselves if they ever need to. Meanwhile, the bad guys can find the same problem and do bad things with them. And so the CIA leaks that came out a couple of months ago, most of those were old and had already been patched. But we are seeing now these NSA leaks that the NSA is still actively using them, has not told the companies they exist, and so these exploits are still available. And I'm guessing this might have been one of the issues that the why the Microsoft, was it the February release was delayed a month? It was delayed a week and then canceled because they found this really bad thing and had to fix it.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of two halves here, that researchers need to be able to do this research. The companies need to update their programs when they're told. But in many cases, the researchers get frustrated because the companies don't do anything about it, and then they have to go public. And then once it's in the public, the company goes, oh, we take our customers' privacy and security seriously. No, you don't. You just, like Microsoft, you just waited 9 months to fix a problem until the guy went public about it. And it's very frustrating. But then on the other side, there are some companies that sue researchers, usually over violating the DMCA. You know, that ugly word keeps coming back.
Right.
In order to find a vulnerability in a program, you, in essence, have to hack into it, make it do something it wasn't designed to do, or find an exploit, an unusual way to do something. And companies, instead of fixing the problem, will threaten to sue and jail the researcher that found it. And there have been a lot of concerns about research, you know, security research being curtailed, or at least diminished, because the researchers are afraid of being prosecuted for finding these problems. And especially a lot of schools that have well-regarded research, computer research. Was it Carnegie Mellon found out a couple of years ago that the NSA was the one that was backing their research into Tor vulnerabilities?
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, we're not just trying to find a bug so it can be fixed. We're finding a bug so it can be exploited by... Yeah. The good guys. You know, the good guys aren't supposed to exploit things like that.
That's right. Well, you would think so. One of the interesting things I like about this particular story is that apparently when Microsoft did nothing about it, these guys wrote a fix themselves. You know, they waited what they thought was a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
So they said, all right, so let's fix it ourselves and heck with Microsoft. And so they're now running servers that are running across the internet looking for this double pulsar bug or exploit and patching it.
Now, the problem is that's illegal because they are modifying someone else's computer without their permission. And so the researchers are doing a good thing. They could be prosecuted for it.
That's right.
Yeah, for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's right. It's terrible, but we see it too
double
often.
Double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, you try to do the right thing and you still get hosed.
There was one of the news magazines did a thing about a botnet, and when they were done with their research, they put a because they were able to infiltrate the command and control server for the botnet, they put a message on everybody's infected screen, saying you're infected, take your machine in for service, and they got sued for it because you modified that computer. Well, we're trying to tell people they're infected. Now the problem is there are so many fake messages you won't believe the real message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, they're crying wolf. So many things cry wolf now, folks.
And that's sort of what it's been left up to. You wait for the customer to complain that their computer's too slow, and then when they bring it in, there's hundreds of infected programs running, and that's probably why your computer's too slow because you waited too long.
Yep. Yep. It's pretty amazing.
But then you don't want to have to take your computer into the shop every week because you got infected again.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and people...
So stop using computers. There you go.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Or use a Chromebook.
Or stop connecting to the internet. That'll help.
Right. And because of that, we talk about Chromebooks and things like it fairly regularly. Windows has lots of viruses. Macs have lots of viruses. Linux machines have lots of viruses. So far, not Chromebooks so far. So if I were to recommend a computer to somebody now, assuming that they just do the normal things people do, then I would suggest a Chromebook.
Yeah, done that to at least four people just in the past 2 weeks.
And then when you get that you have a virus message, you know it's fake.
Yeah. You know it's fake.
Well, as you pointed out, Nick, you were sitting right here.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you got a Windows warning that your Windows machine was infected on your Chromebook.
Yeah.
So that means the programmers were so lazy they didn't even look at your browser tag to see what browser you were running.
Exactly. Exactly. You can find the operating system from a browser. The browser will tell you what operating system is. In fact, I wrote a little piece of code that does that for me. It tells me that my agent is Mozilla and I'm running it on Chrome, on CROS, Chrome OS. And so... you can tell that awfully easily, and all I have to do is pull that little piece of information out of that line, and then I can at the very least say, oh, your Mac,
yep,
or your Linux machine, or your Chromebook.
And put the right icon up on screen, the
exactly.
Apple icon, or the Microsoft icon.
Exactly. All right. Listen, that little sound there in the background, that tells me that we are done. We are done for the day. I want to thank everybody who called in. We very much appreciate your calls. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray for doing the good stuff. I want to thank my tongue for not completely abandoning me today. I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on a straight and narrow, so it's fairly safe. And there's George right there. Those of you on the YouTube can see that. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.